you can't pretend to be somebody else. You can't mimic a coach that you admire or a mentor. You got to speak in your own voice.
Today on the Rising Coaches podcast, we get the pleasure of speaking with the former CEO and co-founder of Rising Coaches, as well as a former college basketball coach, Coach Adam Gordon. Coach Gordon has been in coaching positions at a variety of places, including the University of Tampa, College of Central Florida, Clemson University, Northern Colorado, Mississippi State, and Southeast Missouri State. Coach Gordon was the co-founder of Rising Coaches, where he recently passed the torch and moved on to where he stands now as the VP and Vice President of Athletics at Renaissance Search and Consulting. Please welcome Coach Adam Gordon. Video analysis is expensive and your budget probably isn't getting much bigger. Fulcrum Tech is here to help. Used by basketball teams at all levels from Division I all the way to high school, their Angles product is very similar to what you know and allows you to code, capture, and analyze with ease. All you have to do is import the raw video in Synergy with just the click of a mouse. Over the past 2 years, over 60% of Division I teams in conferences such as the SEC, Pac-12, American, NBC, and A-10, just to name a few, have made the postseason, all while using Fulcrum Tech and saving thousands and thousands of dollars compared to their old companies. Reach out to Fulcrum Tech on X at Fulcrum Tech or their sales@fulcrumtech.com. Just shoot them over an email and be sure to mention if you are a Rising Coaches member. Do more, spend less with Fulcrum Tech. Welcome everyone to another episode. We're here with the man of it all. You have Doug Caputo and Alan Major here, and the person that we get to speak with today, for people who are listening on Spotify and stuff, they're just sitting there like, well, I guess they would already see the name. We have the former CEO and co-founder of Rising Coaches, and it's going to be a long title for you, former college basketball coach and current VP of athletics at Renaissance Search and Consulting, Coach Adam Gordon. Coach Gordon, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, guys? We were just talking about it, but I'm not sure your audience is probably tired of hearing from me. It's always great to be back and appreciate the job. You guys have done an incredible job kind of taking this platform to the next level. So appreciate you too.
Thank you. If you can get everything Doug just said on a business card, you're a superstar, man.
I always tell everybody, I'll do the bragging for you. I know everybody wants to be humble, so I'll. But I want to say real quick before we even hop into anything, this is a complete full circle moment because at one point Adam had me on and was interviewing me. I still have it on my Instagram, and now it's a complete full circle because it's just like, you know, turning the tide. Here we are.
That's what it's all about.
Yes, sir. So what we'll do is we'll just kind of hop right into things. So the introduction that we already pre-recorded, it talked about all those positions that you had, all the stops that you made, including Tampa, Central Florida, Clemson, and so on, all the way up to Southeast Missouri State, which was your most recent coaching position before Rising Coaches. So what inspired you in the what inspired you and what was your thing that like, I want to get into coaching and this is the reason why?
Yeah, I knew at a pretty early age that I wanted to coach. I would say, as early as just as a kid growing up, I just loved basketball and football. Those are my two sports that if I wasn't playing, I was watching it on TV. And I would say probably as early as like 12, I had the idea in my head that I wanted to coach. I used to wake up like on Saturday mornings, kids like would put on cartoons Saturday mornings. I grew up in LA and I would put on like the East Coast NBA games.
That's right.
Like starting at 9 a.m. I'd catch the Knicks, just watch all day long, and then take breaks and go in the driveway and shoot around and then come back. So I loved it ever since a young age. And as I grew older and realized my dream of playing in the NBA was not gonna come to fruition, I really was always fascinated with the coaching side and the strategy and really motivating and leading, groups of people.
And then, ultimately, so you, as I said, your first position started with a student assistant position at Tampa and then ultimately came to a Southeast Missouri State and everything in between. But first, let's start with how did that position at Tampa come about? For maybe those young guys that are listening that are like, this is how, you know, obviously there's not one route, but how did that position come?
Yeah, I knew that like one route to get into it, if you're not a, you know, if you don't have the luxury of being a player at a high level, is to start as a manager. And so I don't know what gave me this idea, but I thought that if I went to a like Division II school, I would get more hands-on experience. And so I looked at the top 10 D2s in the country my senior year in high school, and it happened to be like South Dakota State was D2 at the time, and like Minnesota, Mankato, and all these places in the cold and in the Midwest. And I was like, oh, that sounds pretty nice. I started researching that school. I reached out to the coach, Richard Schmidt, who just retired last year. Great, great man, mentor of mine. And he was like, yeah, I was gonna try to walk on. You know, I didn't realize how good like a top 10 D2 program was. I was like, coach, I want to come walk on for you. I didn't even mention the manager part. And he's like, all right, come on, when you get to campus, like come by the office. And so I did that. I wasn't good enough to make that team. We had a loaded roster at that time. Went right in, you know, I told Coach Schmidt what I wanted to do. I want to coach. And he said, hey, why don't you be a manager? And that's all I needed to hear. And I was all in from day one, my freshman year, all 4 years, and got to take on a ton of responsibilities and learn a ton with Coach Schmidt and our assistant coach, Mark Olson and Lisa Beamer at the time. One of the only men's basketball, this is back in 02 to 06, back probably the only female coaching men's basketball. So shout out to Coach Beamer as well. But yeah, just learned a ton and had a great experience there.
Let me ask you this, Adam, like when you were young and obviously, you know, seeing the game and playing the game, like I can resonate with that because 13 was kind of the number when I started thinking about coaching. So I know that feeling, like when you feel like, and you don't know at the time, but you feel like it might be what you want to do, because a lot of people, you never really know till you jump into it. And a lot of people grow up wanting to be doctors and they see their first cadaver and next thing you know, they're doing real estate. So, you know, you never know. But did someone inspire you as well? Like, was it a high school coach? Was it somebody along the way, in addition to your own passion for it? But did somebody kind of inspire and nudge you also to want to get into coaching as well?
You know, I had great coaches growing up, but honestly, no, not really. I really was a fan, you know, just like I said, watching NBA games and really gravitated to certain coaches. Loved Phil Jackson, read all those books, read the John Wooden books. You know, I really liked the Jeff Van Gundy Knicks teams around the 2000s. So, yeah, I would say just watching those guys. Again, I had great coaches growing up, but it wasn't like one that kind of sparked it. I will tell you the thing that let me knew that this is for sure what I wanted to do. When I was 16, I started working the Jason Kidd basketball camps. So I had an awesome opportunity. My dad knew somebody that knew somebody. They were like, can you get my son a job just as a camp counselor? That was an unbelievable opportunity. And I was really fortunate to link up with some great people through those camps. And I worked them for like, you know, 4 or 5 straight years. So those Phoenix Suns camps were run by Bill Frieder, legendary coach. Wow. And as good of a coach he was, even better at running camps. And you talk about being able to like maximize all the dollars you can get from those parents. He was the master of that. I really did meet some amazing people. Billy Wynn, Gary Tompkins, and rest in peace, and Danny Brown, also two guys who were super influential on me during that phase of my life. And that was really the time where I was like, yes, this is exactly what I want to do. This is the community I want to be a part of.
Yeah, but now you're getting some hands-on experience actually doing it, and that kind of lit the fire, sounds
absolutely
like. Absolutely. Yeah, good stuff, man.
And starting as a student assistant, and then ultimately, as I mentioned, Southeast Missouri State was the most recent coaching position. You were an associate head coach there. And you actually spoke on, there was something I saw, it said, you spoke on being comfortable in your own skin and finding your voice as a young coach. This was on a podcast that you were on. This was a couple of years ago, but can you talk on as a young coach, like you're even at running, working these camps, you know, getting your voice heard as a young guy, but then also just throughout your whole, coaching career, you know, how being able to really find your voice and kind of how did that work for you?
Yeah. Hey, that's life too. That's not just basketball. I think that applies to every, you know, being a father, being a husband, being a good friend. Like, the more comfortable you get in your own skin, hey, this is who I am, this is what I'm about, you know, the rest follows. That's something that's really kind of stuck with me. But yeah, when you're young, you know, I probably wasn't very good at this. Like, I thought, you know, I had all the answers and I probably should have listened a little bit more. But join, I was never club, afraid to like jump in there and let my voice be heard. And right or wrong, you know, that's just, you know, who I was at the time and what I was about. And I think that was good because, you know, I learned some lessons the hard way. You know, I definitely had some head coaches tell me to stay in my lane and keep my mouth shut. And, you know, that was good for me. You know, I needed that at the time. And, but yeah, I mean, look, when you're coaching, you can't pretend to be somebody else. You can't mimic a coach that you admire or a mentor. You got to speak in your own voice. Otherwise, you know, your message isn't getting delivered. People see right through it and you don't come off as authentic. And when you're not communicating authentically, I don't care if you're in a leadership position or not, it doesn't really attract people. You know, nobody really wants to listen to that. So, you know, that's just something that comes with maturity and as you get older and experience different things in life. But that really was, you know, a big part of my evolution as a coach.
Let me ask you this, Adam. Would you suggest or agree with the, it's important as coaches continue to grow when they're young, of kind of almost developing their own clarity, you know, still learn, pull from everyone that you can pull from that you're around, but also like continually looking at themselves in the mirror and say, how do I view the game? And what do I believe in? You know, because I think that also helps develop your coaching voice when you have certain convictions about the game. And like, and you may not get the opportunity to actually control all that till you become a head coach at some point. But would you agree that it's important for guys to kind of continually look in the mirror and say, hey, I've learned this, I've learned that, I've learned this, I've learned that. But then, you know, what does this all look like for me? Because I think that helps your voice as well when you develop some convictions in actually what you believe in.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I had the opportunity, I was a GA at Clemson, and I was there during the time where they fired Coach Bowden and Dabo Sweeney got the interim title.
Oh, wow.
You know, Dabo talked about it at his press conference day one. And, you know, we knew all these guys, you know, the basketball office and football office were right next door to each other. And we would always play noon ball, the basketball and football staff. So we were close. And you know, Dabo would talk about this and he talked about it in that first press conference. And it's not that unique, but I know a lot of coaches do this, but he would keep a notebook throughout the years and write down like what he believed in and what he was going to do when he got the opportunity. You know, a lot of times when you get that interim title, it's always awkward. It's the middle of the season. And you don't know, like, you stick a little bit with what we've been doing, or do you switch up right away? And I'm telling you, he switched up from the second of that first press conference. Like, it was like, this is how I'm going to do things. Really appreciative of Coach Bowden, mentor, whatever. This is my program now. And obviously, you know, the rest is history and he took advantage of that opportunity. But, you know, it just was a great visual example up close and in person of like what being ready really looks like.
Yeah. No, I love that, man. Yeah. Cause his deal was midseason, wasn't it?
It was midseason. Like, yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's right.
It was like four games in. And it was funny because like the head football coach's office was right like up against the parking lot. Like when you parked, you'd walk by the outside of the office to get into the building. And man, those you could never see in that office. It was always blind shut. Like, you know, it was like, you know, walking by tinted windows or something.
Right.
The day Dabo got the job, those things were opened up. You could see right in. I mean, it just like visually, just like physically changed the whole.
Like it's about to be different.
Everything he did was like, we're switching it up. This is my deal now. So
you got to like that. Definitely a change of culture, I'm sure, around there. Everybody's attitudes, at the whole atmosphere had to have just completely changed. I mean, did you see that affected the players in any way just with all of the new changes?
Oh, for sure. I mean, they just had a new life about them and some juice and, carried it out throughout the season. You know, obviously they turned it around and he won the job, but he didn't get that without the players buying in and them winning a lot of games there.
And then another thing we want to touch on, as I mentioned, currently the working with Renaissance Search and Consulting. And now for you, I mean, the one thing I guess I'll say in a more of a broad side of things is basketball has so many different avenues, right? You can work in just being in athletics in general, not even just basketball, but you could be a coach, you could be an agent, you could be athletic director. You know, you can go any route. For you guys, just talk about Renaissance Search and Consulting. Like, what do you guys do? What are you looking to do? How could, and I know you mentioned you work with athletic directors, but just talk about the services that you offer and to be able to help people out.
Yeah, for sure. So we're a search firm. We were established in 2020, by Herb Courtney, who's our founder and president. We're one of the only, black owned search firms that services higher education, athletics, and the corporate vertical. So we work in all those spaces and we work with employers to help them hire. And most of what we're doing is, you know, I work in athletics. I stay in my lane. I don't do the corporate side. Andre Johnson and Gigi Aussie on our team handle that. And Herb does a great job of going back and forth. But on the athletic side, you know, we'll work either with school presidents to help them hire an athletic director, or we'll work with an athletic director to help them hire, you know, either a senior staff member, like a deputy athletic director, or a head coach. And we do all sports, you know, every sport, you know, from soccer to volleyball. And then obviously basketball is what I know best and what I love to do. But it's been a really cool opportunity to, you know, kind of peek behind the curtain and be on the other side of it and you know, try to help in these processes.
No, that's great. And especially, I'm sure there's a lot of coaches out there that could be able to potentially use you as an opportunity, or I should say, I know you work with more athletic directors, but you never know. And then I guess just kind of talking about the hiring process then, since that's a big part of this, like for coaches, what does a typical hiring process look like? If you could just kind of take us through that, like how, maybe on average, we'll say, how long does it take? What are some of the questions, some of the things that pop up throughout that process?
Yeah, well, this is kind of cliche, but it really is the truth when it comes to hiring. Like every search process is different and every athletic director is different. And so they all work on different schedules. They all have different priorities and things that they like and are attracted to and things that they don't like. And so, you know, that's the first thing, is every process is completely different and unique. You know, I guess in terms of like length of time, you know, I know, you know, as an outsider, and I used to be like this too, you know, as a fan, even like you want to see like, okay, let's get this thing done. It's not that hard. Like, 2 days later, let's name a head coach. Yep.
That's right.
Actually, this like football cycle, you saw a couple like hires, you know, turned around really, really quick, which is super impressive. But you know, it takes time. It does take time. And you're trying to coordinate a lot of schedules. There's a lot of stakeholders at universities that, you know, play a role in these decisions. You're trying to get a head coach to meet with the school president. School presidents have a lot on their plate. You know, they can't always just drop everything and jump on a phone call at 3 p.m. today. You know, you got to work in the schedule and you know, so that stuff takes time. I would say for basketball searches, you know, you usually see them in that 10 to 21 day range, but there's been searches we've been a part of that, you know, go on for 2 months. There's been searches we've been a part of that are 5 days, you know, start to finish. So it really, we can work as fast as the athletic director wants to. It's really on their kind of schedule.
This is kind of a two-part question, Adam. Do you find, I think I know the answer to this, but I want to ask you to make sure. Do you find now more ADs that haven't been coaches before that are maybe using search firms more because they maybe haven't just been in the shoes of a coach and just know, you know, there was a time where a lot of ADs were coaches and they kind of had 5 or 6 names in their top desk drawer, you know, sure, if they were to lose somebody, and they were always kind of ready. And then part two of the question is, how would you suggest coaches build relationships with search firms? I know it's always important to kind of be where your feet are, and that's a big deal too. But from a professional development perspective, how can coaches do that? So that's kind of a two-part question there.
So the first part of the question, I think you're seeing a trend of like more and more athletic directors using search firms regardless of their backgrounds. And even athletic directors may know who they want to hire, they'll still use a search firm sometimes. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, as you can imagine, like if you're an AD and you have an open job, especially like an attractive job like a basketball or a football, you just get blown up. Phone calls, text messages, emails, not just from candidates, but from other people, colleagues in the business that are trying to like, hey, put you onto somebody that they know and like, or put in that reference call. And so number one, we're able to like offload all of that correspondence and they can just say, hey, you know, we're working with Renaissance Search, like direct all your calls and emails straight to them. So it clears a ton of space. And that's critical because when you are going through a search, I mean, there's so much information you have to filter through, and you really want that athletic director to like be clear of mind so that they can make the best decision possible. So removing all of that clutter, and even like booking the travel, coordinating the schedules, like we take all that on so that that's off their plate so that they can make the best decision possible. Also, if you're like a state institution, you know, they have certain laws and state rules where, you know, that information, if you're using a school cell phone or email, that's, you know, can be public record.
Public access. That's right. Yeah.
And so, you know, to protect the process, again, even if you know who you're going to hire from the jump, you know, if you're at a state institution and you don't want it out there before, because those rumors kill deals.
Yeah. No doubt about it.
So just to protect the confidentiality of the process, a lot of times ADs will use firms. So yeah, you're seeing it more and more. It used to be that the only time they would use search firms would be for like a football and basketball job. And now you're seeing it for Olympic sports. You're seeing it for assistant AD roles. You know, it's really becoming more and more prevalent in the
administration hire. Yeah. Even presidents are getting, you know, universities using search firm to hire presidents as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There's a big practice of like higher ed search firms, you know, for provosts and deans. You know, that's a big area as well that you see firms being used. Yeah. The second part of your question, how can coaches, that's the $1 million question, right? How can coaches get on the radar or build relationships with firms? I'm really easy to find, you know, having run Rising Coaches, like my email is all over the internet. My cell phone's all over the internet. I'm really accessible. And like, I try to really like, if somebody reaches out to me, like I'm going to hit them back, may not be right away, but I am going to get back to them and try to like have a conversation at least. I know like, you know, some of the bigger firms that are out there, those people are really, really hard to track down. And they always say, you know, hey, when you're in our town, like stop by, and it's not that easy to get them.
Right. Right. They may not answer the door. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I do think though, you know, you got to be savvy, you know, you kind of got to get creative and think outside the box and figure out how can I get into the room with these decision makers? And there's events that we all go to, you know, NACTA is one that's like the final four for athletic directors. Now, I don't think you could just show up there and work the lobby.
Hey, but, everybody.
You know, part of it is just getting into that room. And you know, what I would do and what I tell, the advice I tell people is really leverage the administrators at your school. Those are the people that are in that space that are connected. You know, your AD knows every search firm person because they're all blowing them up trying to get business. And so if you can build that relationship on your own campus with those people, that's, you know, that's how I would go about building relationships with search firms.
Yeah, I love that. Quick story. When I got the Charlotte job, we're in Columbus getting ready for the Big Ten tournament. We finished practice, getting ready to come to Indy. I get an email on my phone from an associate AD, I won't name who it was, from Charlotte. And they actually reached out to say, hey, congrats on your season. Good luck in your conference tournament. Met you at an event in Vegas last summer. Enjoyed meeting you. Paragraph two, as you may know, we have a coaching opening here. Wanted to get your opinion on any names of guys we may be interested in. And I do a chin scratch moment and I'm going, isn't that your job? Like, what are you asking? So part two of the story is I get home that night, I get a text from that same person saying disregard today's email because our emails are public accessible to the media, is obviously mm-hmm. Charlotte being a state school. Disregard today's email. Wanted to see if you have interest in our job. That's how the whole thing started. It was weird, but yeah. It was the weirdest email I've ever received. What's funny is when I walked into the locker room, before I picked my phone up, Coach Mata is sitting on the couch in the coach's locker room, and he's just scrolling. And he goes, hey, Alan, the Charlotte job opened up today. You might want to take a look at that one. And literally 5 seconds later is when I read this email that kind of got the ball rolling. So just a wild deal of how it happened. But it was because of what you just said. You know, you guys are now really important because you can, like, I love the way you worded it, you can remove the clutter. So, you know, that email I probably wouldn't receive now today. It probably would have gone, you know, they probably would have reached out to you guys and got some information about me that way. Right. But at that time, this was 2010, dating myself a little bit. This was 2010 when that happened. Yeah, it was just we were in a different time in terms of searches. Sure. I think now the firms in the last 5 to 10 years it's really accelerated as far as being a part of the process.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, you know, I did a women's soccer search, you know, several months ago, and I'm doing the same thing. I'm going on school directories and emailing people school email and, you know, hey, can we jump on the phone? Want to talk to you about an opportunity. That part hasn't changed.
that's right.
And obviously we want to be cognizant of your time too, so we'll cut to the final segment. Just three quick hitters, three quick questions, basically just to get to learn a little bit more about you. If we haven't heard enough with Rising Coaches and everything, you know, we'll get to learn a little bit more, especially from the coaching side of things, and we'll tie it all in with our final question. So for number one, was there like one thing that really helped you, like the best thing that you did to help excel your coaching career?
I think I did a pretty good job of building relationships with everybody on the staffs that I worked with. I was never, you know, I never wanted to be like this one coach's guy. You know, I really tried to befriend everybody on the staff. And I think that really, you know, paid dividends. And I think when you do that, you got more people that are willing to go to bat for you. So
yeah,
that was big for me. And I did it, you know, it wasn't just like everybody's different, you know? So, you know, when I was at Clemson, we had a staff of Rick Ray, Earl Grant, and Mike Winecki. Rick liked to play racquetball. I'd never really played racquetball before, maybe once or twice, but I learned how to play I became his racquetball partner. And Earl liked to go for jogs. And so, like, I would go run. I was in great shape at the time, I guess. I would go run with Earl because he wanted, like, a running partner. And Mike would go to lunch. Like, he would go out to eat every day at lunch. So I would, like, go to lunch with him. And so I did it, you know, on their terms. But that was that was big for me.
And then the second one is there one moment that haunts you still? Like maybe a game you lost or a recruit you lost, something. Is there one moment that still you wake up and it's just like, it's there?
Oh, man, there's a lot of those. No, I don't know. A moment that haunts me. I mean, there's definitely some games that got away that you wish, you know, you could have done something different. But I don't lose sleep over it to this day.
No.
No, nope. I guess the one, you know, just to share a story, I guess second year at Southeast Missouri, we were pretty good. And we had a chance to lock up, I think, the 2 or 3 seed in the regular season. And our last game was against Austin Peay at home, who Austin Peay was like not that good that year. And so like, and we had just won like 3 straight. We swept Murray State for the first time in school history. We had a lot of momentum. And it was my scout. And so, like, Rick gave me the kind of autonomy to, like, work the rotation and put in who, you know, obviously with his approval. But, you know, he really gave us a lot of leeway with, like, who was going to be in the game and matchups and things like that. We had a freshman point guard at the time who was really, really good, Taj Eden. I probably had too quick of a hook on Taj. I probably should have just let him go out there and do his thing. He missed a couple of defensive assignments, you know, just normal freshman stuff. But he ended up being like, you know, like playing in the Pac-12, and he's still playing professionally. Probably should have just left him out there and let him do his thing. And we ended up losing that game. It was Dave Luce's last game of his coaching career. And he told him before the game in the locker room, like, hey, boys, this is it for me. This is my last game. So they came out, played super inspired. We didn't know that. And so we're sitting there on the bench like, why aren't our guys like, why are we a step slow? Why aren't we staying in front? And so I was like, oh, get the freshman out of there. And that's probably the decision that I made that I like.
That's the one?
Regret. Yeah.
Okay.
Who would have known though on the other side, like that bomb got dropped in the locker room and set those guys on fire, you know, exactly. I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the third question would be just personal. How do you measure success as a basketball coach?
You know, the impact that you have, you know, on the people you're around. And obviously your players is a obvious example, and you want to see them go on to become, you know, good people and have a family of their own and careers and be successful, but also just the people, you know, like the staff that you're around every day and the managers and the people in the office, you know, like once you get out of coaching, you don't get to be a part of any, there's nothing like that. You know, there's nothing like it. That's what you miss is like those interactions with those people every single day and that camaraderie. And so, I think your impact on those people, obviously wins and losses, you know, but
yeah,
greater than that are those connections and relationships that you build.
Yeah, 100%, man. And like that feeling of everybody, I call it, it's like a collective chase, right? Like everybody in the building, janitors, maintenance included, like everybody wants you to, you're trying to this, how do we beat this other team by 1 point tomorrow night?
Yeah.
You know, like, but everybody being a part of that and how they all throw their piece into the pile. And like you said, just the relationships, that you build along the way, man, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's hard to beat.
Absolutely.
And then the final question we have before we get to the closing remarks is, what is your top piece of advice for young rising coaches trying to get their foot in the door? And then how can they accomplish that?
You got to be willing to put yourself out there. This is a relationship business, right? And so you've got to be able to get yourself in position to be in front of people that may influence your career. And you can't come at them like you're trying to get something from them. You've got to really build a relationship and learn and listen and, you know, provide value some way, shape or form. But you don't get to come in and provide value right away. You got to earn that trust and build that relationship first. And then once you have those relationships and you obviously do a great job in your work, I think it's important not to be afraid to ask for help. You know, when you're trying to move up or find another job, or you get let go and you need to find a job, you know, you got to call. It sucks. I've been there. We've all been there. You coach long enough, you're going to get fired. But, you know, nobody wants to be like asking for help, but you have to. You got to call your people and let them know, you know, this is my situation. You know, if you know somebody here, or hey, there's this job open, I know you're close with that coach, can you make a call for me? And so I think that, you know, being vulnerable enough to ask for help and building those relationships, because again, at the end of the day, this is unlike any other profession. Most professions, you go online and apply for jobs, and they're going to pick you based on your qualifications. That ain't how coaching works, as you guys know. You got to know the right people.
You don't get the degree and pop right out into a head coaching position. You got to find your own path through it.
Exactly right. So, yeah, that would be some of my advice.
The seed that you guys have planted with this platform, like that's what Doug and I have tried to continue putting out there, is just that same thing. You know, don't be afraid to put yourself out there. Like, you're always one handshake, one phone call, one relationship away from your life changing. And, you know, you don't always know when that's going to happen or how that's going to be, but that's a big deal that we've continued to try to the seeds that we try to plant. And hearing everybody's stories that have been on this pod, it's so cool to hear everybody's individual stories, because eventually, pretty much 100% of the time, Doug, like their stories kind of line up with what we're trying to promote anyway, is that, you know, doing whatever it takes and, you know, be willing to do whatever you have to do. So, no, that's great stuff, man. Got to be fearless.
Well, and that's why we started Rising Coaches, because, you know, I got really lucky with where I worked and the people I worked for, and that helped propel me throughout my career. But not everybody gets that opportunity. And so we wanted to bring people together. So, hey, we can look out for each other. Just because you don't work for this high profile head coach doesn't mean you shouldn't have access to other people in the industry. And so that's really the whole genesis of Rising Coaches. And I appreciate the job that you guys are doing and keeping it alive and well. And I, you know, it's cool to see as I go on social media and see the clips and the podcasts and this thing continue to grow. It's it makes me proud. So I appreciate you guys for all the work you're putting in.
Yes, sir. Thank you. No, man, I just want to, thank you for obviously creating this platform. And then again, thank you for just teaming up with Rich and allowing us to be a part of it. And like I said, we want to be the best stewards we can while we're a part of it to try to make it 1% better every single day. Doug and I talk all the time about how can we ourselves, he and I, get better? Because if he and I get better, then, you know, that'll hopefully bleed down into what we're doing. So, but no, it's been a blast, man. It's been a lot of fun. The guests have been amazing to us. Just the willingness for people to jump on and share their lives and their careers and their journey. So, but again, we're not here without you. So thank you first and foremost. So, we appreciate you, man.
Well, I appreciate you guys. It's always great to be back. And, obviously if I can ever help.
Yes, sir. You
know where to find me.
Well, we'll be in Phoenix. We'll be setting up shop out there, probably doing some live pods and stuff like that out there at the Final Four. So hopefully we can, we'll run into you out there as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look forward to it.
Well, thanks for hopping on. Again, Doug Caputo and Alan Major, Adam Gordon, thank you again for hopping on to what is ultimately your brand. And we're just happy to be able to take over the torch. And of course, that does it for another episode of the Rising Coaches podcast. Keep working and keep rising, coaches. Take care, everybody. Prepare your team for success this season with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball, the official number one selling shooting machine in basketball. If you're looking to transform and focus your team's training efforts, all you have to do is mention Rising Coaches or tell them we sent you with the Rising Coaches podcast. For an additional $300 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.